Namaste. Good morning, everyone. I was visiting the town of Pune last week, and I decided to meet somebody who had introduced me to his Sufi master in Kashmir. I was seeing him perhaps after the pandemic started. And he has a very beautiful shop full of crystals of every conceivable kind. Quite dazzling, the display on all the walls. And so I mentioned to him that it's so beautiful to just sit here in this surrounding, such natural beauty to look at. Crystals of various colors, shapes, sizes, very charming. And he replied by saying, "You think my shop is beautiful because you are beautiful." And so I said, "That's not perhaps entirely true. Your shop would be beautiful in any case, whether I was beautiful or not." So he said, "No, that's not the point. It was actually his Sufi master. Once, when they were in a group in Kashmir, a fairly large group, it was only this man who stopped when he saw a bush of flowers, beautiful flowers, and commented how beautiful the flowers were. And so the Sufi master replied, turned back, others were around, and told this man, "The flowers are beautiful because you are beautiful." So he said, "I am just passing on what was mentioned to me." And so he said, "You'll be surprised that not everyone who comes into the shop passes a comment like that. They come, some of them choose a crystal they like and ask for the price, buy it, and they go. Others don't comment at all, which doesn't mean they didn't find it beautiful. Perhaps the comment was just not delivered." So if one finds something beautiful, one is beautiful. And likewise, if one finds something ugly, one is ugly, one could say. The polaric ends. The lens through which we view life. Or rather, one could put it in another way, the content of our consciousness. The words we use, the thoughts we have, and so on. I remember this discussion, brief discussion I had with a therapist, where I mentioned in, she watches my talks, and in one of the talks I mentioned, just as an example, let's say we label someone in a certain way. You could even say, you call someone a miser. In Hindi, we would say kanjoos, which is something seen about a person. In this case, the quality of being miserly. Now, we need to know what it is to be a miser in order to call someone else a miser. So, the therapist friend of mine said, "Yes, but not necessarily, because we may not have this trait of miserliness, yet we know what miserliness is through observing someone else, let's say a third party, if you wish. But either way, the point was we know what is the meaning of miserliness. And it was Bhagwan Ramana Maharshi who clarified this point for me once and for all. Because intuitively, I felt either way one knows what it is to be a miser in this case. It could be any label. And therefore, one superimposes this quality on what one sees in another person. I'll read this out. Most beautiful. Bhagwan continued, how does one see a fault in the other? The appearance of the other is taken to be true, which itself is an error. Added to that, one sees a fault in him. That is, one already knows what a fault is, which means the mistake is born only in the one who cognizes. One then shifts it to the other on the back of spurious proofs based on one's valid or invalid reasoning. So who is corrupt now? Who is at fault now? Who is the culprit now? So turn every outward movement inwards. Be the silence, your true self, every moment. Now, where is the room for any division? Where is the room for any division? You see, on the subject of silence, once again, I was in Pondicherry about 10 days ago, and someone asked me this most pertinent question. He said that he has found if something triggers him, let's say someone says something, an effort is made not to answer back, react, and so on. It gets uncomfortable because the natural tendency is to want to immediately say something, but the effort is fairly successful in not allowing that to happen. And then he said, I control myself for the day, and next morning I wake up so relieved because already what the other person said seems so irrelevant. It's gone. The question he posed was, so is it good or bad to do this? And as I keep saying, there's nothing good or bad in itself. If this is a practice one feels like following, try it out. Let there be discomfort. But if the feeling is there, okay, let me see what happens. And sometimes, he said, 80% of the time, it's gone. Even the need does not arise to say something to the other person because that moment is gone. But should the need arise the next day to express himself, the words that come out are much different from what would have the previous day. Not only the words, I said, but the charge which is behind them. And yes, people do get uncomfortable if one is silent. That does happen. People may ask, what's wrong with you? Why are you not expressing yourself? Why are you suppressing things? Why are you internalizing? But to each his own. If in one's experience one finds that silence is truly the golden answer to what arises in the moment, so let it be. As the saying goes, you can't argue with silence. And so people could get frustrated when they are faced with someone who does not respond in the typical way. This was in his case. For someone else, the question may not arise, the question of being silent, because even that thought that let me try being quiet and silent may not arise. And the nature of the person is to be expressive and expresses themselves in a certain way. But by and by, one finds that silence is nothing but the silence of internal opinions, concepts, judgments, how things should be versus how they are, how people should be versus how they are, how people should have said certain things versus what they said. I recall two very similar comments made when I visited two places. One was a temple which had the Sanjeevani Samadhi, which is someone who, a great being, not someone, who goes live into permanent samadhi, whose name was Maurya Gosavi. He was a devotee of Lord Ganesha. And at the age of 186, he went into Sanjeevan Samadhi. This is before Pune. Just before Pune, when you drive on the expressway from Bombay, you come to this temple, Samadhi temple. Now, about a 7-minute walk away from the temple is an old home called a wada, hundreds of years old, where Maurya Gosavi used to be first, live there. And there's a stone which apparently the Lord gave to Maurya Gosavi and said to keep it here, which is on display to bless people. Now, from the temple, we had no clue how to reach the wada. It was not on Google Maps or anything. And Marathi was the spoken language here in this small place, which I don't know much about. And one guard came up to us, seeing we were kind of a bit figuring out what's the next step and all that. And he asked us, and we expressed this desire to go to the wada. And spontaneously, the offer came, come, I will take you. He told his colleague, I'm stepping out. He took us. And conversing on the way, he said, I am so blessed that the Lord gave me a birth that brought me to his door. All I do is I take care of this place. I am one of the guards. I get my 2 square meals a day. But what a blessing. I would not have wanted this life any other way. No complaints, the simple life, completely fulfilled. And sure enough, when we came back from the Vada and I offered him some money for his time, he refused to take it. This awareness, recognition, which many people are not aware of consciously. Why are we there at a certain place? What are we drawn to? It is such a tremendous gift when one is living this awareness. And the same goes for this other man who was not even a guide or a guard. We were in Nasik at the Nivrittinath Samadhi, the brother of elder brother of Jnaneshwar. And I had a wish to go up to a cave which I had visited perhaps 12 to 13 years ago, forgotten the way up. And he came along, this man from this the Samadhi complex, joined us. And absolutely the same sentiment. He said that I am so blessed to be born in this kind of a place, near such a great being, Samadhi. And no rush, no hurry, work is left aside, joined us up the climb, took his own time, we took our time. Blessed are those who recognize the hand of divinity in their lives. While most of us complain about the cards we have been dealt. All right. If anyone would like to ask something or share something, they are more than welcome. It's been a while since we had a Zoom session. We are trying to get things a bit more regular at my home. It's a slow and steady attempt. Might take some time, but that should be happening. I am planning to visit Thiruvannamalai shortly, in a few days. If anyone is there and would like to say hello, they are welcome to. Many plans have been altered and cancelled since the start of this year. One of my favorite sayings, it's attributed to so many different people, so I don't know who the right one is. But it is, if you want God to laugh, just tell him your plans. That understanding, if we can live with, it will make life much more simpler. Things can only go according to plan if it is God's will. I'm a bit rusty with this gap of Zoom, so it will take a bit of time. Okay. Yes, Jagjot.
Good morning, Gautam. How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Very fine, sir. Very fine. So I wanted to ask you about something I read. So Bhagwan says that the source of all thought actually leads us to the I thought. And being in that space of I thought eventually merges one back to the self. So he says, on the other hand, the exercises like yoga and meditation can also strengthen the sense of personal self. Like I am doing the yoga or I am doing the meditation. So I wanted to ask you that, can it not happen in this case also, when one remains with the being, can not that thought also arise that I am doing the being with the I thought, or can it not be also called a concentration exercise?
Absolutely, Jagjot. See, because these are all techniques, his was self-inquiry, right?
Yes.
Now, even when he mentioned about yoga and meditation, it was in a certain context. He is not implying that, you know, yoga and meditation will only strengthen the I. What he is saying is, as Ramesh would say, you know, Rameshji would say that what tends to happen is someone with, let's say, a two-hour meditation practice starts thinking that they are better in some way than someone with a 15-minute meditation practice. You see, that is how the ego comes in. So, of course, it can happen with self-inquiry also. It can happen with any technique, any tool. So he was just cautioning that the ego tends to walk in through the back door. Now, let's take Maharaj, for example. If you've read the book Meditations with Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj, he keeps talking about meditation. Abide in your being, sit in meditation, be earnest, you know. So it all leads to the source, because meditation also is what happens step by step from observing, backtracking to witnessing, and then merging into being. So what Bhagwan is pointing to is precisely that. And this can be a pitfall of anything that we follow.
Okay, so basically this is not a process as such for self-realization. Like, it may happen this way, but it is not necessary that this be the root of the self-inquiry or meditation be the root for self-realization, right?
Absolutely. See, now, for example, Rameshji would say that his technique, so to speak, was personal investigation. Find out who is the me who thinks it is the doer of its actions. So that was Rameshji's approach. So these were all different approaches, and one cannot say that one will strengthen the me more than the other. See, what tends to happen, and this I have spoken to yoga teachers. As we know, we have so many forms, Hatha yoga, we have different forms of yoga. Now, some yoga is very body-centric. It's all about very rigid postures and being in balance in a very extreme way. So what tends to happen is this sense of accomplishment that I am able to do this. The ego takes possession of that. You see, that is the nature of the ego, to own, to possess. And so a practice like this can strengthen the me. And the degree of awareness and knowing that this too happens, then the practitioner has to watch out for that, that this is not happening.
Wow, that is such a relief.
Yes, it is. It is. You see, so this whole thing is, that is why when we talk about peace of mind being the only topic of discussion, one could say, there's very little room for, these layers of involvements, possessions, associations to come in. So we kind of strip it down. So there's really nothing for the me to achieve, because the peace of mind is the absence, you could say, of all achievement. It's so simple. And that is why Nisargadatta Maharaj would say that when you have finished with a lot of other things, you end up at his doorstep.
Okay. Just one last question, Gautam. Bhagwan would often say that when the movement of the mind stops, that is, sensation of the thought stop, it is then that the ultimately, eventually, at some point, the I merges back to the self. Now, like in my own experience, like I have been meditating for quite some time. What I've seen is that the thinking never stops as such. The thinking always happens in any case, whether you're meditating or doing any inquiry as well. But what I've seen is that the involvement with the thinking is gone, so that the effect of those thoughts don't bother you like they used to bother you, earlier. So yes. is he like, that's what he means when he says cessation of thoughts, or is it really that the thoughts stop?
Very beautiful question, Jagjot. And you see, the thing is, when it comes to you and me discussing this, I would say the biggest step first is the cessation of thinking, because we are all plagued with this thinking mind, which is going into the dead past or an imaginary future. Now, what I feel is there's no such demarcation between thought and thinking. thoughts arise, that has been proved, we have no control over the thoughts that arise. But if we kind of keep these words aside, what you find by and by when you are absorbed in the understanding, let's say a thought of ill will or spite will not arise. When one knows that everything is God's will and we are all conditioned by the same source in different ways, what may earlier arise as a thought of ill will and spite, when there's this understanding that consciousness is all there is, we are all instruments through whom God's will functions, such thoughts themselves will not arise, you see, because the understanding has stepped in and transformed the conditioning. There can be other thoughts which are prone to arise. Like supposing I have a fear-based childhood, which was full of insecurity. Those kind of thoughts may keep coming up, but there is no involvement in those thoughts. So once again, it's of tremendous benefit, one could say, to me. So Bhagwan is actually right that less and lesser thoughts arise, because what used to arise as a kind of just condition-based thought response does not happen. Yet we don't know what the next thought is going to be. So it is a bit of both. It is not as black and white as no thoughts arising and no thinking arising. It is a bit of both. And of course, someone of his stature, ultimately, the root of all thoughts is the ego. Ultimately, the root of all thoughts is the ego. That is a fact. So from the level he was speaking, to say no thoughts arise, because he was completely merged in the self. He was at that state. So he is right about that also. But when we see that in our daily living, you're dealing with people, you're dealing with family, I am dealing with people, with family, when we already see the shift that one, involvement does not happen anymore, and two, fewer thoughts of the nature of judgment, separation, and division arise, that's already a giant step. That's a giant step.
Right. Okay, Gautam. Thank you so much.
Okay, thank you. Yes, Deepak.
Namaste, Gautamji. Namaste. And I bow down to you, Guruji. I would like to tell you something that I have tried many months ago to contact you via email, Instagram, and Facebook. And first, just let me tell you what who I am. And my name is Deepak, and I live in Germany, and I'm 28 years old. Originally, I belong to Punjab. And yes, the story, what happened that I'm now here in your satsang is that I was a spiritual seeker since I can remember. And last year, Ramesh Ji has happened to me. And since there, my whole life changed, and as God, as Jagjot said, that the practitioner of yoga or yogic practices, the I, that was clearly in my case also, that I was doing yogic practices before Ramesh Ji happened. And after Ramesh's teaching, there was less and less feeling of the sense of personal doership. And yes, I could really see the impact of Ramesh Ji. And I'm very, very grateful for the happening of Ramesh Ji, and very, very grateful to have this pleasure with you now. And yes, thereafter I convey the teaching in YouTube, on my YouTube channel, and helping people here in Germany, as you do, or Roger or Wayne does it via spreading the teaching of Ramesh. And yes, and I bow down to you all teachers who carry on the lights of our dear guru Ramesh.
Oh, that's a lovely picture. Thank you for showing that.
Yes, if you want, I can show you a little bit of my apartment, because I have the creations happened through me, and I have painting some quotes of Rameshji. And yes, last week I has joined the satsang of Roger, and also tell him that, like, we are all brothers who convey the teaching and live the teaching, and therefore we are very grateful to Ramesh that he happened, and with his teaching that just love is there, and clear understanding that what all happens according to God's will. And when this is seen, then the silence is bound to happen, and what you and all the teachers are saying, that yes, from Deepak, I can say that it is the truth. Yes.
Thank you. I'd love to see your walls, but I think others might get a bit impatient, so we can keep that for another time.
Okay.
And more importantly, you see, the gift of this teaching is that even the ones we don't like are our brothers. As Rameshji would say, we are a brotherhood of instruments through whom God's will functions. And yes, that is why I say that those who push our buttons the most are biggest teachers.
Yes. And I started the teaching on YouTube with your book, Pointers of Ramesh. I'd like quite some books in my shelf. And yes, the people here in Germany, Gautamji, are responding very good on that. And when I say I try to convey, this is false. The conversion or the teaching just happened through me, and I very much try to recognize the deep silence, like Ramesh writes in the book, Let Life Flow, the silence when all things ceased, and it's like a bit of zooming. And when you go deeper, then you will find the vibration of your own souls. And yes, it is what I can say, Gautamji. I just can bow down and wish all you teachers very, very much successful in your work. Should God's will always be your, have your hand up on your head. And
thank you. Thank you.
Yeah,
thank you, Deepak. Thank you. Yes, Kumar.
Namaste, Gautam sir. It's so, so good to see you back. I really missed your sessions a lot. And I just wanted to convey my gratitude and just share something. Like, I've been listening to your videos and attending Zooms for quite some time, but we expect like sudden transformations. So I had certain, you know, flashbacks in my dreams, which I used to resist and all. But I contemplated on the teaching, and there was always a need to have an apology from certain people. And the day the need to be understood and the need to understand them dropped, knowing that they're not the doer. So it was just like a light bulb moment, and those things dissolved. So it's just like a serum that slowly goes in. And I think on the spiritual path, slow is fast. And I just want to thank you so much for all the guidance.
That's beautiful, that on the spiritual path, slow is fast. That's lovely. And that's so true, you know. What happens is that when there are no experiences, we feel we are missing out on something. But by and by, when you see that your understanding, your thought processes have all transformed compared with what they were 2 years ago, 3 years ago, 2 months ago. And the end result is that you are now more at peace than you ever were before. That is a measure of how deep the teaching, any teaching, has impacted one. Because I keep saying this time and again, that what use, I mean, Kumar, you know, there are so many people following so many paths which appeal to them. But when this question is asked, are you more at peace today than you ever were before? Sometimes there's no answer because it was not looked at from that perspective. You see, it was a path or a teaching that was compartmentalized, and then one had to excel in that, and daily living was something else. And therefore, this is the most important question, that what is the degree of peace being delivered to me by this teaching, whether it is teaching A, B, C, D, whatever it is. Because as the Buddha said, it is about sukha shanti. It is about living this incarnation for no matter how many breaths one has left, with as much peace, equanimity, and calm as one can. And that happens when the light of knowledge, understanding, wisdom shines brightly. That nobody is the doer of their actions, including myself. And whatever happens is the will of God. Whether I like it or not, a potential outcome may be seen and may not be a desired outcome. Let's say I see that 5 years down the line, something is going to happen because things are moving in that direction. Could be with a relationship, could be with a job situation. I may not like it. I may do what I think I should do, but there may be a feeling that this is going to happen. It may be inevitable. When there's a total acceptance that this too will happen if it is God's will, then the breath becomes less agitated, more at peace with what is, even what I feel is not a good outcome for me. This peace with what is the dawn of a new way of living the rest of one's life till the last breath. Making no demands on the Almighty as to what should be and what should not be. If a relationship is to end, be it an interpersonal relationship, a job relationship, any relationship, it will end when the charge behind that relationship, one could say the karma behind that relationship, has exhausted itself. According to the will of a higher power. And then you see this living dream of life floating by. You row your boat gently down the stream, gently, gently with others, gently by yourself. And you sit back every evening, marvel at what happened during the course of the day. Sometimes good, sometimes not so good, sometimes pleasure, sometimes pain. and see this duality of life for what it is. The swinging of the pendulum from one polaric end to the other, which eventually exhausts itself out and rests in equilibrium. All right. Yes, Pragati.
Namaste, Gautam, sir.
Namaste.
Thank you for today's session. It's been quite a while. I missed you a lot. And
I'd like to interrupt you here because I'm rereading stories of Ramana Maharshi's devotees before I make my trip, annual trip to the south. And there was one very sweet story I was reminded of by what you just said, where this devotee keeps attending satsang, going to Bhagwan, and somehow feels, what is this all about? I'm not getting it, and so I'm going to stay away. And he stops visiting Bhagwan in protest, you could say, that all this stuff doesn't make sense to me and all that. And days roll by, and then he feels this pull to go and see Bhagwan, and he can't understand it because he feels he's not benefiting at all, nothing is happening, and yet this pull is there. And eventually he can't help himself, and he rushes into Bhagwan's room and apologizes for staying away and confesses to Bhagwan that the reason I didn't come is because I felt it was of no value, no benefit. And Bhagwan tells him, that may be so, but did you feel the loss? Did you feel the loss of not coming here? And Pragati, you know what that is? That is love. So many things make sense sometimes, don't make sense other times. The mind is like this, you know. But if there's something which pulls one, it is only the heart which is pulled. It is the mind which is the monkey mind dancing all over the place. So I was reminded of that story.
Yeah.
Of did you feel the loss?
I completely did, because I've been actually been doing very well, and I felt that life is beautiful. There's peace behind everything that is going on the surface. But then the monkey mind again, that kind of takes over sometimes and takes charge of your life, and you're just crippled. You just can't do anything. You're maybe bound by the past, or I'm not anxious about future ever. It's the past always with me. And over the period of time, with understanding and teachings, I've realized that I'm getting detached with everybody, with my family, with friends. I don't feel like meeting people. And it feels like, what do I say to them? I have kind of lost words. I don't find anything to talk to people. Unrelatable, I feel, with everybody. So what do I do? Do I pretend being involved in life? I feel at a loss here.
Yes, there are two things here, Pragati. One is not being anxious about the past, sorry, about the future, but this burden we are carrying of the past. You see, that is because we are not conditioned by the future. The future has still not happened, so to speak. The past is this burden of conditioning we are carrying on our shoulders. So you are quite right that sometimes it's far easier in some cases like yours to be less anxious about the future, because what is this anxiety about the future? It is the unknown, and anything unknown is a threat to me. So that may be worked out. But this baggage of the past is there because my reactions, my responses come from there. What Rameshji would call hardwired conditioning. So that is there because it is through our past that we view life, current events in life, perhaps future events. So it does happen. Sometimes it takes longer to break down the blocks built by the past. But understanding is all there is. And that will happen when it is meant to happen at the pace it is meant to happen. Now, the second thing which you mentioned is far more common than one feels it is. Far more common, because so much seems irrelevant. So much seems to be conditioning of society, what to say. In fact, the same conversation I had with someone 2 weeks ago at the club, a girl who's going through exactly the same thing, that I no longer can have shallow conversations, ask people about how they are, which movies they saw, which holidays they went to, how is this one, how is that one. You see why? Because what happens is that you are no longer deriving your sense of self from that engagement, which you were earlier. We all derive our sense of self from the way we deal with society and the people and how we like to be liked. Now, when this crutch is no longer needed because one is on the spiritual journey, one is introspecting, one is going within, then there's a shakeup. What happens to these relationships? I'm not anymore able to sustain them. That is also still a temporary phase. You see, the same relationships get redefined. It is not that they drop away. Some may drop away, others may not, but the way one approaches them gets redefined. So when you are no longer wearing this pretense, like you said, you know, pretending, does one pretend? No, one does not pretend. It is the me with its sense of doership which pretends. One is now more comfortable being who they are. You see, it is actually a great step in transformation, because now you are no longer going with a fishing rod trying to make people like you and draw people to you, because that has gone. If that had not gone, you would still be playing the old game, which you are not. What happens with time? Because you see God in everyone. You see the same consciousness in everyone. But you are no longer engaged at the level you were at because of social conditioning and norms. You will find by and by that some people will be drawn to your new vibration. Others may not. And new people might come. We don't know. Relationships are just redefined. Those that are meant to drop away will drop away. Those that are meant to transform will transform. New ones that are meant to come will come. We are fine with what is. That is what happens. But if there's this feeling that I don't want to talk to anyone, I don't like them, I don't like this, what they say, that what they say, that also has to be looked at. Because one has to see, have we really understood the dynamic of relationships deep enough? Or are we creating an aversion for ourselves? You see, that is why the Buddha's path, being the middle path, was the most beautiful. Neither at this end of the polarity, nor at that end. Because those are the extremes. So that you must ask yourself, that where am I in relation to the relationship? Am I viewing them as individuals or as instruments through whom God's will functions? That is a very important introspection that is needed. But rest in the knowing that this too shall pass, and you will realign, readjust, find a level, so to speak, from which to operate. That is what will happen.
So I do not see people beneath me. I don't look down upon people at all, because I feel that ever since I've started looking within, I've found so many faults with myself that I cannot think of looking at other people's fault. I feel like I should take care of myself instead of looking at others. So it's just that I don't connect anymore. That's all. It's not that I don't find them good enough or anything. It's not like that. I completely understand their perspective. In fact, that way is, even if there are people I don't like to talk to, I don't take them as somebody, you know, beneath me. It's not like that. And I don't know. I'm quite restless these days, extremely restless. And I wanted to email you. In fact, if this satsang had not happened, I would have emailed you definitely.
Well,
yeah.
Restlessness is also restlessness of the mind only, right, Pragati? So this is a movement of the mind, if possible. I know it's easier said than done. One witnesses the movements of the mind without really striving to make it any other way than what it is. Wishing, of course, who wouldn't want to not be restless? We all would. But so be it. This is what the present moment is bringing. And it is to be met in recognition and awareness of what is happening right now.
One small question, last question. I have not been meditating for quite some time, and I just don't feel like it since the last 3-4 months, and I completely dropped. So understanding initially that it's a phase, that I don't feel like it, so I don't do it, but it's just not happening. So should I still keep waiting for it to happen?
You have to do precisely that which you think and feel you should do. If there is guilt developing, then go ahead and try meditating. You see, I'm very lucky that way, Pragati. I wake up every morning and sit in silence for about 45 minutes to an hour. And whether it is a good meditation or not is irrelevant. Somehow the body still gets up and sits, and it is done with, in a sense. So I'm very fortunate that I've never been through these phases of, I feel like stopping, I feel like starting. It's just, I don't know whether it is prarabdha or something, but it just happens quite effortlessly, irrespective of how good or bad the meditation is. That is, I'm really grateful to God for that. Okay.
Thank you so much, sir. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, Holger. I think I missed seeing your hand because your hand is a fairer hand than the other Indian hands.
Sorry. Nice to see you, Gautam.
You too.
I just wanted to express my gratitude. And since a while, I hear myself and feel and believe that reality is friendly. And this is so wonderful. I mean, for sure, not appearances, but what's behind it is just friendly and cares for everything. And this is just such a beautiful presence.
Yes, beautiful.
And one day, not today, but I would like to ask you, what do you think how Joel Goldsmith would speak about COVID?
Ah, that's interesting. I already know the answer, but that would need probably an exploration of another half an hour. So we could keep that for another satsang.
Yeah, it's so interesting because I feel so invincible on one level. I mean,
yes.
But it's just whatever. I just wanted to express my gratitude. And during the last weeks, I once in a while thought about you. But I must admit, I didn't miss you, which is very beautiful.
Maybe if something is a part of you, you cannot miss it.
Yes, yes. And I can just confirm the beauty.
Even that is possible. Who knows?
Thank you
very
much.
Good to see you, Holger.
Ditto.
Let's take Abhishek as the last question.
Good morning, sir. How are you?
Sick. Yes, good morning, Abhishek.
How are you, sir?
Good. How are you doing?
Good, sir. Good. I'm doing good. So I just like to share my experience. It's like for a week or so, I'm, witnessing, as Rameshji would say, that witnessing whatever is happening. So I'm doing my office work. Everything is going on smoothly and whatever the thoughts are coming. So I'm really witnessing it that, okay, this is arising on its own. I'm really not doing anything. Everything is going fine. Then after a week or so, flip-flop happens and I think that I've lost every concept or Rameshji what he's told. So I think I am lost in the labyrinth again the next week. And the next 2 to 3 days goes into total misery. So what I think is it's the mischievous ego, right? which thinks that it has lost everything, though it has never gained anything, right? So for a week or so, everything is very smooth. Then 2 to 3 days next is like, I'm not able to understand, comprehend anything. And then I try to, you know, juggle up with the concepts and everything. And then again, things go right. So what is it?
You see, this one needs to know more of context. But let me give you a separate example which may make this clearer. Let's say I have 1 week at work where I have a nasty client or a nasty colleague to deal with, right? Now, my understanding so far is, thanks to the teaching, that they are playing out their script, their role based on their conditioning, their genetics, and I have to deal with the situation as it is without finger pointing and blaming and condemning. So that understanding takes me through this week, because that awareness is there that this person is doing precisely that which they are designed to do. Now, the next week, with someone else, something happens and that understanding goes out of the window. That means that it's not settled in yet. So if I find in the next week that I'm blaming and condemning someone, and then I say, my God, what happened? That is still great, because you see what has happened. The teaching has already been absorbed by the system, so to speak, whether it is the mind-body structure, whatever it is. So sometimes this new conditioning pops up immediately. Sometimes it takes time and my old patterns are coming in till the recognition happens. Oh my God, I was lost in the old way of thinking.
As Ramesh would said that from the scale of 1 to 10, it can arise at 9, at 8, and then eventually at 1. Is it the same?
Yes, absolutely. So it is still not,
if the understanding is not there the next 2 to 3 days, it is still not my doing, right? It is still and happening.
Correct. And most important point is, Abhishek is aware that sometimes it is there, sometimes
exactly.
It is not there.
Exactly.
The old Abhishek may not even have had this.
Never.
See, that is it. That awareness is the key thing.
So it's a shift, right?
It is a complete shift. Otherwise, whatever happened, Abhishek listens to the teaching and still he's blaming, condemning everyone all the time. Then no shift. But supposing it has kicked in and Abhishek is now seeing that some weeks are good, some weeks are not good. Some weeks full understanding is there. Other weeks it goes by and by, but that awareness is there. Now, who created that awareness? The teaching created it, not Abhishek. The teaching seeped into Abhishek's consciousness surreptitiously and said, nobody is the doer of the actions. It got absorbed. And that is why I would like to end on this note of this great Sufi mystic, Radha Mohanlal Saxena, affectionately called as Bhai Sahib, who said, the teaching is not given at the mind level. It is infused. The teaching is infused. Consciousness is delivering the teaching to consciousness, which appears as two individuals, Abhishek and Gautam, or Abhishek and anyone, appears. But the fact is, without that consciousness, both of us would be dead bodies. And all there is consciousness. Consciousness is delivering the teaching to consciousness, to itself. That is the whole play. Then Abhishek steps in as a filter and says, this part I get, this part I don't get, this part this week, this part next week. That is the role of the ego mind.
And at times I'm not able to comprehend why I really like this teaching. I don't know.
That's the best part. I could not comprehend Nisargadatta Maharaj's statements, which didn't make sense to me. And then I went, like his statement, I've mentioned it in an earlier class, only the dead can die. I thought it was the most absurd statement I had ever heard. Mind you, I was probably 15 years younger. And I went to my teacher and I said, what is this? It makes no sense, but I love it. And he replied by saying, this is what apperception means. when our teaching bypasses the mind and hits the heart, you love it. It doesn't make sense because the mind is trying to interpret, figure it out, join the dots, but it's hit home. The job is done, Abhishek. It is because only the resistance of the mind which is at play.
Because an year ago when I started, you know, listening to these talks and all, I thought, no, this is the rubbish. No, it's not like that. And I still don't know what made me think that it's true. And I have a feeling now that it's right. This teaching is right. So I don't know how it happened automatically. So I think that's what it's happening. It's happened on its own. So
yes.
Yeah, and thankful to you and Rameshji for everything.
Thank you, Abhishek. Okay, I'm going to change the screen so I can see all of you.